from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Tuesday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning, Brendan Hartley winging his way presently to be New Zealand's next Formula One driver. Mike's very excited about this. He's less excited about people calling for high-paid people's pay to be revealed, if you know what I mean. Speaking of paying for things, the price of sending your kids to university and winning at the Taupo Hole in One. But before any of that, NZME's merger.
The appeal against the Commerce Commission's decision over the potential merger of NZME, the company that owns this station, and Fairfax began yesterday. And what's important about the case, even if you're not gripped by these specifics, is the overarching precedent. Now, part of the argument is that the Commerce Commission overstepped their mandate, and the Commerce Act is about the economy, not whether the number of voices in the media market, as they argued, would be disrupted to a degree that the merger should not go ahead. Now, one of the better lines delivered by Fairfax's and NZME's QC was that the Commission had adopted an inappropriately static approach. What he means by that is what we've argued on this program all along. The Commission are a bunch of geriatric old-timers who have not grasped the real change and disruption underway in the media market. And the market is now global, and whether a couple of players locally join forces isn't going to make a lot of difference to whether you get your news or not. And a further quote used yesterday referred to Donald Trump and his line about Twitter. And a Twitter feed was like owning the New York Times before it started losing money. So not only did the Commission step arguably outside its mandate, in stepping outside it, it really didn't or doesn't get a true grip on the landscape it's passing judgment on. And sort of ironic in a way, given this case started yesterday, was the announcement also yesterday from Vodafone and Sky over their new TV offering, remembering, of course, that it was also the Commerce Commission who blocked Vodafone merging with Sky in another judgment you could well argue that was outside their mandate, given they'd argue that all that stopped them from giving the go-ahead was the rugby. You control the rugby, you control your profits on pay-per-view television, forgetting, of course, that Sky already owns the rugby and therefore controls it. Anyway, back to NZME & Co. The precedent is important if they can swing the case against the Commission because, if the argument is right, and I think it is, you simply cannot have a Commission with this level of power wandering around stopping people doing business, especially if they don't truly understand the business itself or indeed the industry. This whole thing has smacked of thinking from a bygone era from the start, and jobs and bottom line suffer as a result. And if that can't be established in this appeal, then the Commission might well be left to run rampant, causing Lord knows how much damage.
So, yeah, we'll wait to see what happens there. I think Mike's made it fairly clear where he stands on that one. Where he stands on motor racing is that he's kind of into it. He certainly likes driving fast, and nobody drives faster than Brendan Hartley, especially when he gets in one of those Formula One cars.
Really, really looking forward to the weekend.
What's the gap between a simulator and the real thing?
Yeah, it's still pretty far away. I mean, you don't have that same adrenaline rush through your veins, obviously, but it can prepare you to a certain extent. It's better doing it than not doing it.
Just talk me through. Just take me back to Japan. Did it affect you over the weekend? The phone calls, the discussions, the decisions, all of that. Did it get into your head or not?
Well, we still chucked it on pole together with Earl, which was great. Actually, it was the first time myself and Earl had done qualifying together and achieved that. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I got peppered with questions from all the media, and I think it came as quite a shock to a lot of people. No one was really expecting that announcement. So, but no, I dealt with it well. And to be honest, I switched my phone off most of the time and didn't do too much reading. I did catch my brother and my dad on the news. Someone sent me a video, which I found quite amusing. But honestly, it's been really nice to see the reaction and see all the support from everyone back at home. And that's, yeah, it's nice. And on the other hand, I'm trying to forget about that and just try and enjoy the weekend and do the best that I can. I've got a big challenge ahead, I have to say. But I feel ready for it. I just need to be relaxed and do my best.
Turns out he's quite hard to get hold of now, Brendan Hartley. Now he's a big flash Formula One driver. That's what happens, apparently. But we did get hold of him and we got him on air, so that was good. Mike, also a hard guy to get hold of unless you happen to know him personally, because he's one of the highest paid guys around. I wonder if that's why he's so sensitive about Pauline Hanson's calls for high paid public servants to have their pays made public.
Do you think Winston and the shambles around waiting for a government is bad? They have their own version, of course, across the Tasman in the form of One Nation, the brainchild of Pauline Hanson. She has a similar sort of hold over certain proceedings. Their system infinitely more complex than ours, given they've got the upper house, of course. But her latest policy win involves the government directing the state-run broadcaster, the ABC, to publish the names and salaries of everyone who earns over $200,000 a year. Now, this is a petty little exercise, petty and futile. What possible good can come from it? It is, of course, driven out of the BBC decision to do the same thing, which led to nothing but the predictable outrage from the angsties on social media, the sort of person desperate to start their day with a good moan. There is no doubt that if you're paid by the taxpayer, though, or the ratepayer indeed, that a level of public accountability exists that doesn't in the private sector. And that, in general terms, is probably no bad thing. There was some justifiable upset, for example, the other day over the number of people at the Auckland City Council who earn over $100,000 a year. There seemed vast numbers of them. But the critical part of it, and this is applicable to all disclosures of public organisations, indeed all listed companies as well, the people themselves aren't named. And this is where accountability turns into a sideshow. Publishing salary bands is a world away from knowing what Bob, the chief financial officer, earns, say $260,000 a year. What Bob earns isn't the business of anyone other than the person who writes the checks, no matter where the money for those checks comes from. The general exception, of course, is chief executives and board members, but here is the simple truth behind the sport that is outing well-known names and their incomes. It is for little more than gossip and spite, little more than envy and bitching. It serves no purpose, and it hampers the organisation to compete in a very competitive marketplace. And let me assure you, the same would apply here as it does in Britain or Australia, that the state broadcasters don't, as a rule, pay well. And as outraged, as upset, or infuriated as you might be about any numbers that make the public domain, they are not a patch on the serious coin that's floating around the private sector. And it's that private sector the state has to so often compete with.
While we're talking about paying people for things, how much we have to pay universities to take our kids off our hands? Those latest figures have come out.
Oh, we're starting to think about this at our house at the moment. The old tertiary years, the university years, and what you go on to study once you graduate from high school and all of that. And I note that the cheapest degree at Auckland University next year is going to be $6,000. Cheapest thing you can do at university, $6,000 a year, and that's several years' worth of that, and that's before you take into account living costs. The price has gone up, of course, as it does every year. I didn't realise, but universities are only allowed to increase their fees by the amount of inflation, which is about 2%. So they've raised the fees by 2% maximum allowed by the Ministry of Ed, but $6,000 a year, and that's for your arts and your health sciences and your science and tech and stuff like that. You want to do medicine, $15,500. Per year.
Aren't we getting our first year free, though? Isn't that?
Well, that depends very much on the meeting that starts again at 9 o'clock this morning.
Do you reckon that could be one of the stumbling blocks
Lord,
there?
Lord knows where they're at with that.
I mean, I feel a bit the same way about this as I do with schools. No prize is too much to make my kids go away from me, really. Finally, when you are going away, if you drive through Taupo, you would have seen that hole-in-one thing.
The Taupo hole-in-one? Who hasn't done that? Who hasn't been to Taupo and played the hole-in-one? Oh, don't look at me like that. What's the matter with you? Every New Zealander has played the Taupo hole-in-one. Every single New Zealander, clearly apart from you.
I've seen it.
You've never played it. What's the matter with you?
What? Because I don't want to humiliate myself in public. I mean, it's a very busy road. There's thousands of people literally could be driving past
road,
watching me top the ball straight into
driving
Lake Taupo.
Is that Glenn? Is that Glenn with the 7-eye? Oh, God, it is. Oh, what a dreadful swing.
Yeah, why is he holding it that way up, they'd say?
That's true. Do you know, here's the interesting thing. The company's been sold, and Ngāti Tuwharetoa have bought it. It's been running for 24 years, and I've often thought, what's the thing you think every time you're standing in Taupo swinging a club, smacking a ball out into the lake, thinking, I'm going to get the hole-in-one, I'm going to get the hole-in-one? What you're thinking, of course, is how many hole-in-ones are there? How hard? Because I've never come close, and I used to be a moderately good golfer. And I, you know, when you're a moderately good golfer, you back yourself. You think, hello, a little nine iron. Put it in there, we'll be right. And you think, well, no one's going to get that. No one can possibly get a hole-in-one. Do you know how there's one every 2 weeks? 950 hole-in-ones. Isn't that incredible? It's way higher than I thought. If you'd asked me to guess, I would have said 127.
I don't know why I cop so much flack for not having done it. I'm just not that good at it. And also, really, even when I did used to play a little bit of golf, my ball would always go directly into the water hazard, regardless of whether it was a water hazard that was on the hole I was playing or not. It would just go straight towards the water. I feel like when you're trying to get something into something that's surrounded by water, that's never going to work for me. I am Glenn ZB. That was the re-wrap, a sort of a soggy one, really, for Tuesday. We'll try and dry things out for you tomorrow. I'll see you then.